Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick.
This episode, we're speaking with Alex Elliott-Howery from Cornersmith in Sydney about pickling, preservation, community and the roles that they play in food security. Welcome to the Food Fight podcast, back for another episode. My name is Steph Postuma, joined by my co-host Simon Evans.
Hiya.
And we are here upstairs at Cornersmith in Annandale with Alex Elliott-Howery. Alex, thank you so much for joining us and having us here upstairs in this beautiful light-filled room.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. All right. Well, we start our podcast with an acknowledgement of country. So we'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we gather and speak today. And we'd like to pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Okay, let's start the podcast, guys. Alex, there's so much to talk about, and it's a very opportune time to start to discuss what Cornersmith does and things like pickling and food security. But to start with, tell us a little bit about how you started Cornersmith and about, was pickling and pickles an idea from the start? Was it always going to be a big part of what this place is?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I've been thinking a lot over the last 3 months during all of this time about our beginning and how it all started. And I think it's really relevant. So I am not a trained chef at all, enthusiastic home cook, psycho obsessive person. When I find something I'm interested in, I can't stop.
Sounds like a chef.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I think it is at heart. And my partner James has always been in the coffee game. So I was at home. I had two small children. I had my babies young. So I was at home with them trying to figure out my life, trying to figure out what I was doing, and started thinking about food in a different way than, because I was, you know, had kids at home, lived in the city every week, go to the supermarket, fill up the trolley, come home, fill up the fridge, feed everyone, at the end of the week, throw food away. And I was like, there's something in this cycle that is not working for me. And I didn't quite know what it was. And I didn't know a lot yet, but I started just thinking about it a bit more. I did heaps of reading, heaps of research, watched heaps of, you know, stuff on YouTube and read books. And I realized how fucked our food system is, basically. And that I thought maybe I needed to single-handedly change that. So I took on a massive mission and wanted to educate myself. So for 1 year, I was completely obsessive and completely changed the way I did everything at home. So I didn't buy anything from the major supermarkets. I didn't buy anything that was overly packaged. I didn't buy anything that was imported because I felt like food miles were an issue. I didn't buy anything that had too much plastic. I wanted to know where the food was coming from. I wanted to eat seasonally. I didn't quite know what I was doing, but I was kind of doing something. And it was over that time where my partner and I were talking more and more about the Sydney food scene and all these restaurants and these cafes. You know, this was 10 years ago. These cafes that are great, but like, it's like the conversation isn't getting bigger. So I kind of was like, I think we need to try and take what we're doing at home and this conversation that we're having, and look, it's not new, it's not like we invented it, and see if we can make this work in a business, really, I guess. So I spent a year obsessively teaching myself how to pickle and preserve because I felt like that maybe was going to be the answer. I taught myself how to dehydrate heaps. So we just ate like astronauts for a while. It was all, I don't know. I don't know what I was doing, but that was kind of, there was something in this and I was like, the food system has to change. Mm. So that was the beginning of Cornersmith.
Was there, and I'm going to kind of divert where we are a little bit because we'll just immediately start talking about you know, food security and food waste, because you've already mentioned it so much. But was there, when you realized that there's something fucked about our food system, was there something that triggered it? Like, was there something, was there a particular moment that you can remember that you were like, something needs to change?
Yeah, look, for me it was putting the garbage out. And I would, like, every week, you know, you're filling up your thing, you fill your garbage bin up, and then it was getting taken off. And I was like, where is that even going? And then I just was thinking about it. I was like, I'm throwing away so much food. And, like, little kids are nightmares. Like, they have one bite of something and then chuck it in the bin and, you know, or leave it on the ground or whatever. So I felt like, and I'm, like, quite a conscious person and quite an environmental person, and I was having so much waste. And then I was like, I was at home a lot on my own, so I was also going a bit crazy. But I was like, if this is me doing this, that means the neighbours are doing it, which means the whole, you know, and I just couldn't stop thinking about it. Bit OCD maybe.
Yeah, it's quite scary to extrapolate that.
Like, yeah.
I was thinking like just from like driving and I'm like, it's a lot of cars.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's only a small like, area.
Yeah,
like,
I'm just driving up one street.
That's a lot of cars.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's a lot of cars. And like, yeah, same with anything, like a little bit of waste you make.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also I was trying to figure out how to feed my family. Like, I was young, I was 25, I had two little kids. I was like, how do I feed everyone in the way that I want to? And you go to the supermarket and the answer's not really there.
Mm.
Like, everything, I was like, oh, it's got too much of this or too much of that, or it's packaged. Or, so I felt like I had to teach myself how to cook from scratch. And that was the turning point.
Mm.
It was like, I can take control of this. I will empower myself. I'll feed my family. And I felt like instead of looking at cooking as being like me being like tied to the kitchen, I looked at it in a really empowering way.
Mm.
Was that easy to transition from buying at supermarkets to finding small growers, or where did you go? Did you go to markets or?
Yeah, I mean, I went to the markets a lot. Once you start thinking about it, once you start talking to people as well, I mean, they're just, it seemed like there's actually a surprising amount of food around. I mean, even in my neighbourhood, I live in Dulwich Hill. It's an old Greek and Vietnamese neighbourhood. So, you know, I didn't buy oranges for that whole year because there was all the Greeks were so, they loved me. They were like, oh, there's a crazy lady on the corner who wants the oranges and the lemons and, you know, the chocos and all that sort of stuff. So, look, it is hard. And I was home, so I wasn't at work. I didn't have to have that time pressure, which is why the supermarket's so great. But it's just changing your habits, yeah, I reckon. Totally.
It's interesting. It's such a journey, isn't it? That that and once you get involved in it, it becomes such an enriching part of your life in a way. Like, I have had a similar journey in a sense since I moved back to Wollongong and started volunteering with Hidden Harvest. Shout out to Hidden Harvest, the food waste organisation in Wollongong. You learn so much in this, and once you become a part of the community, there's so many people around you that you can learn from, and you learn different ways of doing things and different places to shop. And now I'm actually working temporarily for Food Fairness Illawarra and discovering even more what's available in our local area and the different ethnicities that have these beautiful little grocers or delis or things like that that you can use.
It's down to access and education. A lot of time, I think people, I mean, maybe yourself as well, you go, I want to make this change.
Yeah.
What do I do now?
Yeah,
where do
exactly.
I go? Where can I get things?
And I think for me, I just looked at the supermarket and I was like, wow, everything in here, someone made once. And I'd like look at mustard and I'd be like, I bet I could make mustard.
Mm.
So then I'd go home and like teach myself how to make mustard.
Yeah.
And I was like, tick, done. But I also think my mistake I made then is that I was like, I have to make everything from scratch. So it was like I had a nervous breakdown because you can't.
Mm.
But that got me thinking about community and how we don't share food and we need to share the labor and the resources and all of that stuff as well, which is kind of like, you know, Cornersmith started, but is why I started the cooking school, because I don't think everyone should make bread and cheese and pickles and mustard.
Yeah.
Like, you make the mustard, I'll make the bread, and you bring the sausages.
Kilos of mustard and trying to make 500 grams of mustard, a loaf of bread.
Exactly, exactly. And share the load. So, and I think that's why the cooking school's been so successful, is that we're also, it's a very kind of realistic. Like, we are busy. Jamie, my friend Jamie and I run the school together, and we are busy working mamas, so we're not home all day. Yeah. And we're trying to get that into people's heads. Mm. Like, it just doesn't have to be all the time lifestyle.
So we'll kind of swerve back towards Cornersmith and its evolution. But, like, why then was a bricks and mortar cafe with a pickle and preservation sort of element to it the route you sort of thought about in terms of becoming a part of a community and educating community about food security and food preservation and stuff like that? Because you could have just, you know, gone and worked for an NGO or started a little community organization of yourself that was just pickling workshops whatever it might have been. Like, why is cafe the way?
So I guess James has always worked in, Matt's my husband, has worked in coffee and the food industry and was, you know, getting a bit older and was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to just work for other people forever. So we were kind of making a lifestyle choice and probably one, a bit of an unrealistic one of the fantasy about having a family business, yeah. Which, you know, I'm sure. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. All day. It'd be great.
No, we finish at three. What?
Yeah. Dictate your own hours.
Exactly. So, yeah, we wanted to have our own business, I think. I felt like it was, I don't know, I mean, like, I'm 10 years on the other side now, so I'm trying to think about when I first started why we thought that was the way to go. But I think it's that I felt like it would be a really accessible way to get information to people, to everyone, because people can come in and just grab a coffee and not engage with the other side of Cornersmith, which a lot of people do, or they can come in and kind of go, oh, that's cool, you guys are getting lemons from your next door neighbour, like just starting some conversations without people having to go to a workshop or sign up for something they're not quite sure. Because people who come to those things are already in it. So it felt to me it was a way to kind of spread the message in a really gentle way. We've got bigger and louder and prouder over the last 10 years of like shouting our ethics. Whereas in the beginning I was a bit like, oh, we'll just kind of go slow and see if people are interested. And they were just like, I couldn't believe how interested they were. So I think it was the idea of having a business but also figuring out a way to get information to people.
It's such a good point, because you've got to, I mean, whether they like it or not, if they just come for a coffee and breakfast and they think it's just a cafe, you've kind of got a little captive audience where you can drop little hints about
exactly
what you do and what you care about.
Yeah,
because we find the same thing at Hidden Harvest, that like even when we run a workshop or when there's an event, it's people that are already interested that are just showing up.
You're preaching to the converted.
And they want to support it.
Yeah.
And they already are aware of the work that's being done. But when you can find a new audience with something as mainstream as a cup of coffee,
yeah,
that's where you can start to sort of really see
trickle
into other, put your tentacles into other pockets of the
And
world.
We'd have tradies come in and look around and be like, what's all this shit? And that's a really great way to start a conversation, you know? Like, all this shit is actually really important, mate, you know?
Exactly.
Have a go. Beautiful, curious tradie statement. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you
asked.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, so you started Cornersmith in Marrickville.
With the cafe, little cafe, little baby cafe.
Little cafe. And you were just doing pickles out of the kitchen there?
Yeah, so we'd close on Mondays for pickling, which was like a terrible financial decision, but we did it.
Was that from the start?
Was from the start, yeah. That was from the start. And that was kind of, when I think back on it, was just like we'd make 20 jars and we'd be so pleased with ourselves, and then they'd all sell the next day and, you know, I'd be like, fuck, I've got to do it again. So it took off in a way that was very unexpected for us. I think it was the right time in that people were starting to wanted a little bit more from their dining experiences as well. And also we were in Marrickville, which is an area that I guess there wasn't a lot, there was a lot of people in there. There wasn't a lot of this kind of like new phase of stuff. There's heaps of great Vietnamese food and kind of old school cafes. So it was, I guess we were the new kids on the block doing something, like we had beehives on the roof and pickles and
cool. And so what was the initial response? Like, I mean, you start as a cafe and people come to you because you're a cafe, but like how quickly did people start to get what you were doing outside of
pretty fast? So one week in, we arrived at work and all our windows had been smashed in with fuck off yuppies written all over the, like, and we were like Firstly, so my husband was so offended that they'd called him a yuppie. He was like, that was the first thing for him. But like, we
it's
were
such
like,
an old school word.
I know, yeah, exactly.
It's a yuppie. It's like a 90s slur.
And like everything smashed. And like we'd pan paint, like we'd painted the ceiling, and like James laid all the tiles. Like we'd done it all, and we were just like so heartbroken.
Who would get that offended?
Oh, I know. Look, it's a long story. Like, I won't get into it here. Okay. But but what came out of that was that all these community that were people we had no idea about arrived on that day as we were like sweeping up the glass, and people bought flowers from their garden, and someone bought a watermelon that they'd grown with a bow wrapped around it and gave us cards, and I just spent the whole day crying and people hugging us, and I was like, wow, this is actually really good for business. But also
it smashed
our window. Yeah, exactly. But also what it made me realize is that, you know, we represented something more for our local community. They really were starting to, you know, they were interested in what we were doing and they wanted us there. And so then we started the trading program where people could bring in their home. So they could bring in their excess homegrown produce to us if they had too much of it, and we would use it. And I just did that after that person bought me the watermelon with the bow. I was like, wow, people want to connect, and it's got to be, it's in a different way. So the guy who lived across the road, he was a lawyer in the city, and every morning he would bring us a big bag of homegrown Rocket, and we would trade him his coffee, and he'd go off on the train and we'd have Rocket on the sandwiches that day. And then I was kind of like, this is nice. This is feels good. So we put a little sign up. I think it might have even been before Instagram.
Wow.
So we just put, well, or before I knew about Instagram. I wrote a blackboard and stuck it up on the window. And, you know, the next morning we arrived and there was a basket with pumpkins. Like, it's all very romantic. And but in an urban area, I felt like that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that kind of grew, and the trading has been a huge part of our business now.
How did that kind of go financially with, obviously, that trade and barter of actually placing, like what's one pumpkin worth?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
is that worth one pumpkin?
Like, do you know what? Do you know what? The majority of people didn't want anything.
Oh, right.
They were just like...
Even better.
I know. Great, so it worked out quite well. I've got heaps of this. It's going to rot in my backyard. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a few people where you're like, you know what? Actually, we could buy this for... cheaper than what we're doing for. But it was more of a gentleman's agreement, really. Like, people would bring in a box of lemons and we'd be like, do you want a jar of pickles? And they're like, no thanks. Or they'd take something. And it's been it's surprisingly easy.
Yeah, we'd have it in some of our customers at Cavote, and they would... They'd be quite proud of the stuff they'd grow. Like, one guy loved chilies. Like, we never used to put chilies on the menu.
Yeah.
But he'd always bring us chilies.
Yeah.
Like, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Cool.
I mean, there was a lot of that. It got to the stage where I was like, we can't actually deal with all this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Either, which is kind of why we started the picklery up the road, because I was like, well, there are so many grapefruits in the inner west, and they all bring, no one wants them, so they all bring them to us. So we kind of had to figure out how to expand the concept.
Mm. And I think that, like, even the fact that you've got this blackboard downstairs where you're like, traders, Joe and Lisa, I don't know, you can insert the names, pumpkins, Rocket, whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's not only, you know, supplying you food from the local community. So we're talking like, you use this food. So it doesn't have to go to the markets and it doesn't have to travel here and whatever.
No.
It gets walked down the street in a basket and delivered at your door. But then it's also like... It allows people to be like, okay, well, what is this traders thing? I remember the first time I came in and I wasn't across the whole Cornersmith idea, but I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's just people around here that are growing. Like, because usually it'd be local producers.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's just people in the neighborhood who are growing stuff.
Like, yeah.
And that potentially like activates people to be like, well, I live over here.
Yeah.
Like, I can grow things.
Exactly.
Like, and stuff like that. And that's the next evolution of that.
Exactly. Which is why we do it, which is to draw attention to that you can live in the urban area. Like, I love the city. I don't want to live in the country. But I want all of that stuff. So I think it just gets people thinking and talking. And, you know, it's the same at the cooking classes. I see so many people come in and like, someone grows pumpkins and someone grows lemons. And like, by the end of the class, they've swapped numbers and are going to go and... And I cry and, you know, feel very pleased with myself.
That's good. Job satisfaction.
Exactly.
Need that occasionally in hospitality.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, so you get Cornersmith Marrickville to a point where it's working and the community knows what you're doing. And tell us about then when you decide to open the pickery and
yeah, so look, it was too fast, really, on in retrospect. But we grew out of that little cafe. Like, we took a we took that shop, the cafe space, because it was little and it was safe, and we had no money, and we got too big in kind of the concept too fast. So up the road, a old butcher came up for lease. And I came home one day and said to James, I think we need to open a pickery. And he was like, you're a fucking lunatic. But what even is that?
Yeah, this doesn't exist.
Sure. Is that even a word?
To define it.
Yeah. But it kind of allowed us to expand the idea, really. I wasn't quite sure it was going to be a school yet. I just knew people were obsessed with our pickles all of a sudden. They liked the trading stuff. I was kind of on a bit of an adrenaline roll of like, oh my God, this idea is so good, without really thinking much else through. So we took that lease within the first year, I think, of having the cafe, and then pretty quickly opened the school and the pickery. And that's kind of evolved over 6 years, 7 years, maybe even longer now. And started out as mainly pickling and groceries, so you could come and get proper free-range eggs and pick up pickles and bread. And now it's basically a full-time, well, it was before COVID, a full-time cooking school.
Mm.
And it's weird. Like, what is it? I don't know. It's a really weird shop, but people love it. And I think, again, it's like my main aim is for it to be an education hub. And it's kind of growing into that as I grow, as I, you know, figure out how to run a business.
It probably would have been a difficult thing to, you wouldn't be able to start. Just, we're a pickery and cookery
school. No, exactly.
Building that community. Yeah, exactly. And that kind of face, and that almost like, this is an example of what we do with this stuff, and you can learn what we do here, and having that kind of synergy between the two.
Absolutely. There is no way we could have, like when you said before, there is no way we could have just opened like, hey, we are a pickery. Yeah. Everyone be like, what?
Yeah.
But Cornersmith really quickly was, the cafe was winning awards and was, you know, the best cafe, and was, it kind of got this name for itself. And then I guess people were like, oh, what are those guys up to? We were trusted to do the next thing.
Were you at the point where you were just selling out of everything you could make?
Yes.
In the other sense. So you kind of, you knew there was going to be some scalability.
Yes.
Well, if we're doing this, we now need to put out this many.
Yes.
Can we sell that? Do we have customer base?
Yes, which we are still in that problem 10 years later.
Yeah.
So any business advice is welcome. Yes, and I, you know, we had no idea what we were doing. Mm. Like, we'd never run a business before, and suddenly we had this really like thing that people wanted, and we didn't quite know how to do it. So we've muddled our way through, basically, I think. But what we've never lost, and it's to our detriment financially, we've never lost our ethos. Like, I just will not budge on it, which is why I still drive a beat up old car.
Yeah. I don't have a car.
There you go. The dream of hospo,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You do have a car, Simon.
Well, yeah.
Your car just has unregistered been. And it's sitting in the car park at Cabot.
Yeah.
Well, cheers to that. Yeah. Cheers to that.
Taking up space, taking up valuable Wollongong car park real estate
eventually. Yeah.
Don't tell the council.
I can walk everywhere except when we come to Sydney.
Exactly. But luckily this guy will drive you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I've got a hire car at the moment. That's because mine's at the mechanic. I actually have a car.
Yeah. Non-hospital.
I got out of hospitality so I could get a car.
Yeah. That's the thing is, okay, yeah, it's a crazy old thing, and it's not like worth your time half the time. But,
yeah.
But you, like most people in this game who are passionate, like you really couldn't think of doing anything else.
No, and I don't think either James or I could do anything else. I think we're actually unhirable. Like, we are just stuck in Cornersmith forever now.
I don't think I can actually work for someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly well. it's... I think, we sort of spoke earlier before we started about how hospitality pivots really well. And pivot's been the word that's been thrown around a lot.
Mm.
And how I think it's more of just like, well, we're stuck doing this. We've made our bed.
Yes.
So let's just make it work somehow.
Yeah.
So whether it's like, let's do a cookery school. We did the same thing at Cavo. We used to do cookery school once a month, and it was like a whole day on our day off, and it was a lot of work for not crazy amounts of money, but it was like, well, let's do this to keep us going. That can pay for that, and then we can get this thing that we want. And you kind of do just make it work. And you end
on the fly.
With a weird jumble of business ideas sometimes. Yeah. But if it works and people like it, then it works.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that I feel like we've tried lots of different things over the years, and I think that's something that is interesting in hospitality as well, but that the cooking school to me feels like the core of everything and also the future for us. Like, education is got to be – the thing. I mean, in every facet at the moment, particularly people want more knowledge, more information. So yeah, that's got my, if I could open my school again, then that's where we will go hard and fast.
Was the cooking school, like, in terms of like, because we talk about how difficult it is to run a hospitality business.
Yeah.
And now post-COVID, like, we've seen the absolute infinite array of different adaptations and side hustles and different income streams that businesses are able to generate in order to keep their business afloat during COVID.
Yeah.
But like, was the cookery school or like part of the Picklery or the upscaling of the Picklery, like, was that kind of like ever like a hedge on having cafes and trying to just generate other income streams to keep you
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, you know, everyone who's in hospo knows you have months where you don't make any money. So the having, I guess, multiple arms of the business allows us to have, you know, lean on a different side of it at times as well. So we'll amp up the pickling. When the cafe's quiet, we can amp up the pickling. I can put more classes on. Yes, but I also think they seem to all work as a concept. They all work together. So people come to, like, I think the experience is people come to the cafe, they look up, they see all these pickles that we're making, they look over, they see the trader's board, and then they go, oh, they also run classes in making this stuff as well. So, and then they can kind of come to the school. So it, don't know. I think it works.
Well, it's an interesting,
if you've got the same ethos flowing through everything.
Yeah.
Even if it was like, I'm going to do the Connor Smith podcast.
Yeah.
It's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
But it holds true to that.
And I guess maybe now we're kind of an idea more than anything.
It's interesting because I think it's like in anything that as business people we do, that like, especially if you're the one, if you're the driving force behind it, or yourself and a partner or something like that are the driving forces behind it. It's like, you can't, like, if you're a person with strong values, you can't separate your business from your values in a way. Like, everything that I do with my business started as I was making cookbooks and selling cookbooks, and that's all I did. And now we find ourselves doing these podcasts in regional areas, talking to the same people that were giving me recipes for the cookbooks, talking about the same stuff, just in a different format.
Absolutely.
Like, it's all just it just naturally, like, there's been no intention to do it in this certain way. It's just naturally happened. Like,
yeah. You know. Yeah, because people often say to me, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, well, I run my own business. I don't know how to explain to you all the things that I do.
Self-employed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, just name a job.
I'd do that. Yeah, I'd do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think, like, I guess touching on the cooking school thing and a thing that, like, I've talked to about with, do you know the guys at have you heard of Buena Vista Farm down in Jerry?
Yes, yeah. I have. I love those guys.
Yeah. So when they started their cooking school down there, like, Fiona, when I did a podcast with them when I was doing the Illawarra cookbook, mentioned that services and experiences people pay more for.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like, and I cannot keep up with pickling classes. Like, we run a whole range of classes, but I've been doing this for 8 years. I'm still running so many pickling classes all the time. And I think about it a lot. I'm like, what is this? Like, it's not actually just about pickling, I don't think. I think it is the experience of it. I think people want to know how to be self-sufficient. I think people want to connect with food again. I think people want to get out of the supermarket. It's like, it's not, like, the pickle is just something to do while we're talking about all these other things, maybe. But yes, it is it's the part of our business that is kind of easy to run in some ways, because you don't need many staff. You know who's going to turn up. You know how many tickets you've sold. You know, it has its own headaches, but it's...
Yeah, we always... Cookery schools we do still at Cavo were like... Sometimes it's the hardest day, just being like on with customers.
Well, you've got to be on all the time.
Yeah, for like, and it was, you know,
3 hours.
They were there for like, four and a half hours there with us.
Yeah.
I was there before prepping and then thereafter. Like, I think that was the first one Tom and I did. We were like asleep on the dining chairs.
It's pretty intense.
That was exhausting.
You've got to be on all the time. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I should say this, but they want me to be Mrs. Corner Smith, on living my best Corner Smith life. Like, it's not where I'm, you know.
Well, that's it. There's like an aspect of this sort of like
It's performance.
Performance, yeah. and hyper-personality about it.
Same jokes.
Yeah, same jokes.
Yeah, and we tried to do it, and we like laughing, like, then eventually we were laughing that we were making the same joke.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we were laughing about that. I know. About once every 2 years, Jamie and I say, maybe it's time for a joke update.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah, got to build it in.
Same yeah, exactly.
We're recycling jokes for the podcast as we speak.
Yeah.
Sustainable recycle jokes.
Okay, well, I want to ask you about pickling in general. Like,
yes.
You're in the middle of a pickling boom, essentially. And you did like...
Pickledemic.
I'll give Cornersmith the credit it deserves in being a part of that. But like, how have you seen this sort of pickle trend around you? Because it's not just jars of pickles, but like there's a pickle on every menu in Sydney. Mm. Like,
yeah. It's funny. I mean, yes, like credit due to Cornersmith. It's funny when you're kind of on the edge of it. Like I don't notice it that much, but... We started, 10 years ago, and people – just having pickles on the shelves, and people were like, whoa, like could not get enough of it. But it's still the same.
Mm.
Like we have these newsletters. We send out our newsletters and we're just like – it's like this mad rush. Everyone just manically buys pickles online like they've never seen them before. I mean it's – I don't quite understand it, to be honest. But I think there's the buying of the pickles and the eating of the pickles is a different audience to the people who are making the stuff, who are coming to me to learn how to do it. Mm. I don't know why people are so obsessed. Like, is it the flavour? No, I don't know. Yes?
Once people kind of get the palate for, like, pickles and ferments, like, they're quite kind of addictive.
They are addictive.
Those kind of, like, with those... That kind of umami savoury.
Like the intensity. Yeah.
It's kind of a quite addictive flavour.
It is an addictive flavour, and I think maybe once you start eating like that, you also realise how awesome it is. Like you can have a couple of condiments. Like I've got permanently 3 or 4 different condiments on the table, and we just add it to whatever. So you can turn a pretty average meal into something awesome.
It's almost like a little kind of status symbol for a certain group of people, possibly of having like it's like. I've got these pickles from Cornersmith.
Yeah, right.
I've got these pickles from
Coles or Woolies. Well, I do think it's been successful for our business in that it becomes a conversation starter. So even if, you know, like...
It's kind of advertisement.
Yeah, and that goes to someone's house and then they go, oh, what's this cool? This tastes good, whatever. And then you talk about the pickled grapes or whatever crazy thing it is and then it leads to... So that's kind of how I try to see it in a way. Is that?
I guess there's potentially also like... There might have just been a point and it might have been an amalgamation of chefs putting it on menus and you guys doing what you're doing and other people doing stuff too. But like for quite a while, I just remember when I was young, pickles were gherkins and onions.
And a bit gross.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that was it. And there wasn't like a huge differentiation between like you can do dill ones, you can do sweet ones, you can do spicy ones. Like, and you can pickle anything.
Yeah.
And it's not just something you have like on a cheese sandwich. It's something that you can put with a piece of fish or like
in a salad or like, and I guess maybe that education of people knowing how to eat them as well has been that they can have them in their fridge and not feel like it's going to sit there for 3 months.
I think there's a look back of like people are looking back and going like, what are these older techniques
that
we kind of lost? Which is funny because they're only kind of lost like in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
like parents' generation, grandparents, like they would pickle and preserve stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, we'd make chutneys and things. So there's a kind of look back of people to look at these older techniques.
Yeah.
And obviously with the environmental part of preserving food and adding that longevity. I think it's very much in the kind of vogue of what's happening now.
Absolutely. And I think that people, you know, it's the same with coming to the classes, maybe it's the same with buying them, is that you feel like, yes, it's delicious, but yes, it's also doing something good. Mm. We are supporting a small business. We are reducing food waste. We are, you know, learning about old school skills. We're talking about seasonal produce. So I guess, again, it's like it's the pickle is not really what the pickle is. Mm. It's like that's delicious, but it's got this big idea behind
it. I think it's the kind of the Nordic influence of food around the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a big I mean, the fact that you can buy a pretty weighty book all about pickles and ferments. Yeah,
and I guess also, you know, every culture pickles. It's just us that feel like it's new and weird and crazy.
Yeah.
And what I love the most about pickles, Scott, here we go.
Yes, is let's
really go deep into it, is that, now I've forgotten why I love them so much.
I just really,
really do. But... I guess maybe what I think is that the it feels like most cultures value food in a way that we don't. So while we will throw it in the bin, other people who either value food more or don't have the finances or whatever it is will go, what else can I turn this into?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that to me is what the pickling and the fermenting and all the, you know, cheese making, all of this stuff is about. Yeah. I'm not going to let this ingredient go to waste. It is too special. What comes next?
Mm. Australia kind of missed out on that by being a young, you know, from a white person's perspective, a young, fairly rich company, country.
Yeah. Is a bit of a company at the moment, but anyway. Yeah.
It's around like that.
Yeah.
from the off, whereas you know, pickling and preserving came from sort of peasant food in Europe and things like that.
Yeah.
It was like, we have this, how can we use every part of it?
Well, how can we have this in summer? So or how can we have it in winter?
What seems like wanky like restaurant techniques like confit, like that's like a peasant way of preserving meat.
Yeah.
Fat. Like, you know, it's yeah, kind of the domain
and I think maybe
now.
It's looking at that stuff that has always just been in high-end restaurants where people can't quite connect with it or don't understand how they could do that at home, to us bringing it into going, say, you can actually make sauerkraut out of scraps that you have left over, you know. So I think it's maybe just bringing down the veil of that these are hard techniques.
Do you worry by teaching everyone how to pickle, they're just going to stop buying them? Because it's
absolutely not.
It can be a
no. People say that to me all the time. Yeah, right. And firstly, like, if anyone wants to start a picklery, good fucking luck. But also, most people will definitely pickle. Mm. But like, I mean, I still buy stuff. Like, if I see something that's great, I will buy it.
Yeah.
It's not like I only eat food that I make myself. And, you know, we are all busy city people. Yeah. I don't think everyone's...
Well, not everyone cooks.
Not everyone cooks. And I've got... I think that's why, actually, coming back to the business side of things, the people who are learning to pickle are coming to me and they're buying a class or they're buying my cookbooks. Mm. The people who are not interested are just going to buy it on the shelf. So it kind of opens up my audience, maybe. No, I'm not worried.
That's good.
Yeah, not at all. I just write another cookbook.
Yeah. Let's talk about cookbooks now. I want to ask you about cookbooks because I make cookbooks.
Yes.
And then we'll finish off with a bit of other stuff. Mm. But tell us about, like, how did the evolution of a first cookbook happen?
Well, hilariously, we'd had the Cornersmith Cafe for a very short period of time, and a publisher came and knocked on the door. Actually, two publishers came and knocked on the door. I'm like, do you want to write a cookbook? And I was just like, laughed. sorry? No, I don't think I could do that. Like, I'm just me. But anyway, with much love and hand-holding, felt like we had enough of a story and enough of an idea to write a book. So that first book was a massive eye-opener and, you know, it's like you're first baby. It was like the first cafe, like I put everything into it and all very, you know, like the personal story and also the whole ethos of Cornersmith. Mm. And that now is such a, oh my God, I'm weirdly maybe going to cry. Sorry. But that's, to me now, really feels like I'm so glad that we did that. And it doesn't, cookbooks don't make you money. Nothing in hospitality makes you money. Mm. But that is like, you know, I will look back on that book and that feels really amazing in that that's kind of how it all started, and it was so early.
Yeah, right.
It was so early in the piece that I'm, you know, surprised we could pull it together.
Mm.
Thank you, publishers.
Yeah.
Thank you, Murdoch.
How did you go like you have to write an introduction or whatever?
That was really hard. I mean, I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
I guess I have a lot to say and I really love what I do and I really believe in what I do, and it comes from a really personal, like, it just comes from me. So that's not that hard in some ways.
But like there's a moment there, and I've had to do it too, because I make these cookbooks about regions, and it's happened with, like, let's use the Illawarra cookbook as an example. And I sit down to start writing the copy for the book, and it starts with the introduction. And I go and I just take this big breath and go, how do I encapsulate
everything,
what I'm trying to fucking say?
Yeah, like exactly.
And it just seems quite daunting. And then you start writing and you eventually get somewhere. Like, and the trick is to just start writing. And,
yeah, exactly.
And you see what happens. But the moment of just trying to...
I know. Yeah. I always leave it till the very end, until the publishers are now is the time.
Leave it in
now is the time. Well. There is no more time left. Yeah. So then we did another book. I did another book with our head chef at the time, Sabina, Salads and Pickles, which was awesome. And that's the one that most people who are it's all vegetarian, and it's mainly like just so many pickles and how to eat them. And just finished the third one in COVID.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, amazing.
And it's a very weirdly relevant book, kind of accidentally relevant, but it is all, I wrote it with Jamie, who runs the cooking school with me, and it is all about, it's called Use It All. And it's amazing. All about using it all.
Yeah.
And it's about whole ingredients, and it's about how to change it. It's kind of a sustainable guide, really,
awesome.
For home.
Mm. Perfect.
It's less cafe. It's more home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People need it. There are so many interesting and cool, if you like cooking, there are so many interesting and cool and fun ways to use all of your food.
Oh.
And it's just like the world is just the world of, you know, just using the whole
very
food.
Rarely something that you need to throw away.
I know.
Like, whether it's like just stock or like dehydrating. Like dehydrating is the best one. Like when we just like juice things and just make powder.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, this is great. This is the ingredients.
And once you're kind of in that frame of mind, you can't throw anything in the bin.
Yeah.
You know?
I've always just had like multiple, just like what's that? My like, it's something fish stock.
Just can't get rid of it.
Just some scraps that I don't know.
Which is like, good. And it's so creative. Like yesterday we made a massive batch of this pear and lemon and rosemary chutney and all the cores were sitting there, like a big bucket of them.
Yeah.
We kind of look at each other and I was like, we can't throw them in the bin.
Yeah.
So we cover them with a sugar syrup and we added all this stuff and we ended up with this amazing, well, dessert syrup, I guess. It almost tastes like Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
And it's pear core, I don't know, syrup. Yeah. So delicious. I really recommend making it if you ever find it.
Once you know the kind of basic techniques of ways you can do things, a lot of time is like, chuck it with some sugar.
Yeah, exactly. Like add some flavor.
Our friend's bar, they do Fireball and apple juice.
Oh, yeah.
So they have heaps of like random apple kick out.
Mm.
So when we're doing Goodwill Only, so like a pay what you feel community kind of project, we were taking all that and then making a syrup out of it and serving that with the dessert we were doing.
So good.
And like they pump through apples.
Oh, yeah.
So like, and they're just throwing out this massive thing. Like it did take, you know, some quite a lot of sugar and
yeah.
and a bit of reduction and a bit of thickening to make. But we were like, that's delicious.
And I think you start looking at food waste or scraps or whatever it is in a different way.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I look at them now and I'm like, there's got to be stuff we can do with that.
Sometimes this one was the most, it's the best part.
I know. Like you've made the chutney. Sure, yeah, that's delicious. Like, yeah, now we've got the cores. Like,
how can I make this great?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's like an actual challenge.
Yeah. And we are, our waste hacks that we do on social media, on Instagram, are just gathering so much traction and it's really just getting people to rethink scraps. They don't have to do it, but they're thinking about it or to change their habits. So every Wednesday we do something like what to do with orange skins or what to do with beetroot stems. And like yesterday or whenever it was, this woman who does natural dyeing came and got all our onion skins from our onion relish.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw that post.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, this, we need to connect with other people in the community so that even the food waste is becoming, you know, we were just kind of saying, oh, well, one person's rubbish is someone else's gold.
Mm.
And she was so pumped. She was like, there's no way I could ever come across 30 kilos of onion skins
and onion
myself.
Skins is one of those things that you just can't use. Like,
no.
You can't
I mean,
do
sure,
it. Like,
you can try.
Dye,
well, you actually.
Even, you're not really supposed to compost.
You make a little black powder and
exactly.
call it onion ash.
Exactly.
And everyone goes in, oh, my God.
But on the home front.
Too much on because it will taste like onion ash.
But on the home front, yes. No one, you do, you know, there is nothing you can do with them. And she was super pumped and made beautiful things. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm really excited about that side of stuff.
Like, it's something that especially like if you think about the craziest week of COVID where people are like, you go to the fruit and veg, you know, section of your grocer or wherever and there's shit all there.
Yeah.
Like, and people are like, fuck, what am I going to do? Like, they're actually like eating the stumps of their food.
Because yeah, they had
like,
no
I
choice.
I don't know if I'm going to get more carrots this week like, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, like, I think people are hungry for education.
And also I think there was a big thing about, you know, you'd go to the supermarket and it, like what you wanted or what you were feeling like wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually set off panic. It wasn't that they were going to go hungry,
but
what was in their mind that they thought they were going to buy wasn't there.
Yeah.
And that's really important. That needs to happen more.
Yeah.
So people go, seasons are a thing. I'll have to I don't just have to buy what's on the recipe. I can interchange it with this. Yeah. I actually think that was a really good thing. And I think
I remember going to the supermarket and like, all the meat was sold out except the kangaroo.
Yeah.
There was actually like, it was completely bare. There was just this one stock of kangaroo. And I was like, great, I'm kangaroo.
Perfect.
Kangaroo's yeah. delicious.
And right? you wouldn't like, have normally bought that.
I would have. We use a lot of kangaroo and things at the restaurant. So I'd buy it quite often. But like, it's always there. And I'm like, great, I'll be fine during a pandemic.
Yeah. You're not afraid of kangaroo.
It was kind of like a good, especially if you went to a supermarket during that time, it was like, gives you an understanding of what people actually eat, like in general. Like I was down the south coast and went to the supermarket to get some stuff. And I was looking for some dry stuff because, again, uncertain times. I wasn't panic buying, but I wanted some stuff just in case I couldn't go to the... I wanted to go to the supermarket once a fortnight or to the grocer once a fortnight and get my dry stuff. So I went to the supermarket and pasta's gone, rice is gone, all that stuff's gone. But you go to the Asian section, there's soba noodles, there's vermicelli noodles, there's rice noodles, there's all sorts of beautiful dried stuff that'll last you a lifetime. And
people it was just still like, there.
It's not rice or pasta.
Yeah. Like, yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know. It was an interesting one. So like now that we're on this, we'll finish off by sort of where we are now a little bit. But like while COVID was happening, you've obviously got your business to think about and you're like, shit, how are we going to get Cornersmith through COVID?
Yeah.
But like, were you at the same time thinking, well, fuck, Cornersmith's the like exact thing that people need right now in terms of like what we stand for and what we educate people with. I also have this like role to play here that I need to figure out how to save it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. All of that was going through my mind. Yeah. And I had a few people send me texts going, if Cornersmith goes under, there is something really wrong with the world because it is what people need. It is what people want. And it's kind of, I don't know, I feel like this, in some ways we're lucky because we've put so much energy and effort into all of, you know, community and reducing food waste and educating and all of that kind of stuff. COVID hits. And people are still supporting us because they want to support that ethos as well. So in some ways, we've been very lucky. Yes, I think I do. Like, I just don't think Cornersmith can ever close. Because when we closed our Marrickville Cafe, people would yell out the window at me and James while we were walking down the street. Like, they are so connected to us. Well, it's not us, but to the business. That we're afraid to ever do anything else, basically. But yes, I think though what we will have to do, like all businesses, is that we have to adapt. We have to change what we're doing because there was so much that didn't work during COVID, and COVID made it really apparent what wasn't working in your business. Yeah. Whereas when you're busy and you're hustling, you're just kind of like, deal with that later, and you never deal with it. So we need to change what we're doing. I don't want to have three shops. I don't want to have, like, that's really changed. It's made me realize what I want personally. I think that the community businesses run by actual people is the future of business. Yeah. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I feel like not these big restaurant groups and all this kind of stuff. You need to, like, I would come to your place in Wollongong because I've met you and I want to support you and I want you to be able to have a car one day. You know, but that's how I think it kind of needs to. I like what you're about, and I don't know, that to me, I was like, that's going to be a good thing that comes out of this.
Yeah, I think it's the hospitality model in general has some major flaws in it.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see a lot of changes. I think probably quite likely a lot of the restaurant's going to make is using up their waste.
Yeah.
Is putting those cheaper cuts on, is finding those different vegetables.
And not chucking the tops of everything in the bin.
Exactly. I think that's going to be a change. So you're probably well ahead of the game there.
Yeah.
But then there's some kind of inherent flaws with it, which makes... you know, having multiple venues and a big company with lots of money behind just inherently safer. So definitely there's been some changes on the ground.
Yeah.
Which I think people are seeing. Even just like a cup of coffee should be more expensive.
A cup of coffee is so expensive. I don't know why. It should be more expensive. Yeah, it's so expensive to make.
Yeah. So, things like that. I mean, I'd probably... mention this every podcast.
No, keep saying it though.
Pay off your food.
Yeah.
Drinks.
Like, and our food is everywhere is too... cheap.
Yeah, like it's ludicrous. Like, but I mean, that's an issue in itself that people like. There's certain things like okay, coffee has to be below $5. Like, there's literally like and it's same kind of wine and cocktails to an extent, although they're much more inflated. Like, but it's like if a cocktail's more than $20, then it's expensive. So $18 is fine. Like, you can get away about 18 to 20 for an espresso martini, but 22, people are like, what the hell? Like,
you're insane.
You're about 18, making $14 off you.
Yeah.
But like, you won't pay more than $5 for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Like, it's some weird things.
The cocktail comparison is such a it's such a weird one, hey, because people do want to pay $18 for a for a cocktail that they'll smash in 4 seconds, but then like, you're like, oh, well, why don't you get one of our small plates that's $18 at like at a restaurant or whatever, and it's like.
Yeah,
$18. Like,
a couple of duck rolls.
Round of espresso martinis. Fucking $160 later. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah. It is. No, it's very strange. But we everyone does need to spend more money at shops.
It's almost like there should just be one collective unification of hospitality people saying we're putting a tax on our product, and food isn't expensive enough tax, and everything's going up. Like,
there's always been that, but it's been the wrong way, where there was a price fight of like, you can get a steak on the plate for under $20, which is ludicrous in itself. Like, so it's been a fight the wrong way. We need to kind of fight. It's like, who can have the most expensive dish in
and everyone buys it.
Yeah, like, who's got the most expensive coffee? Wow, it must be great. Like, that's the kind of vibe we need.
Tough one. All right, let's start wrapping up. Alex, what's the name of the new cookbook?
Use It All.
Use It All. When's it coming out?
It is coming out in October.
October. Fantastic. Just in
time for Christmas. Pre-orders very soon, though.
Yeah.
So keep your eye out.
You can get it pre-orders through Cornersmith and
sign up to the newsletter. Fantastic. I'll let you know.
What else? Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you've got planned?
Well, not yes and no. Like, we don't know what we need to do, but we need to do something, like all businesses are probably feeling at the moment. So we're talking endlessly about that. I really want to have one shop. I think a flagship store of Cornersmith, where you do everything in one space, is what we need to have. Where James and I are here, if we can work in the same room together at the same time. Not easier said than done.
It needs to be spacious.
That's why we actually had three shops. So that it's all, I think, you know, having what I've noticed after COVID, having multiple rents to pay, having multiple insurance to pay, having multiple managers to pay, we can't do that anymore. So we need to change the model. But I think it's also going to work well in that we can really push the side of stuff that we want to push, which is, for me, the future's education. I'm actually a bit tired of what people want for breakfast. I'm a bit tired of haggling over the price of things. So, and that's fine, and we will always do that because we love it, and we love that the community uses our space as a place to come together. But education, education, education. For me, that's what will drive me for the next, God, however many years we are still working, I guess. Yeah.
Well, hope we've educated some people through our conversation. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. It's been great.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's simon_evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.